This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest, Match Review Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Podcast. I'm Chris Hambling. We're here to look back at the crazy home game against Bournemouth, which saw Roy pick up his 100th Premier League win, and Palace score over a quarter of their home goals for the season. We'll be dissecting the game and looking at the end of season issues right after this.
Back of the Nest, Match Review Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Right, it's time to meet the panel for the week. First up, it's DR Kerners. Hello, DR.
Hello.
How are you, young man?
I'm fine, you?
I'm all right. I'm curious. You're fasting at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Why, when it is called fasting, does it go on for so long?
Oh, too much Nick. You know, that's a Nick joke.
Yeah.
I don't know, Hambo. I'm fine mentally. Some people struggle, but I'm used to it now. So yeah.
I was talking to a cab driver fairly recently, who was driving me from Crawley to Reading after my car broke down, and he was telling me how that when he fasts, he has to drink an awful lot of water before sunup. Do you do that?
For sunup.
Before the sun comes up.
Sun up. Yeah. I do. Oh, it's so hard though. You have to balance it out, because if you drink all at once, then you can't eat because you're full. That's why when I do that, I can't bend myself. Like, I can't bend over, like, let's say when I'm cleaning my feet or whatever at night.
I mean, there's a lot in that.
I realised that.
We really don't have time to go through any of that, sadly. But good information, DR. Really appreciate it. Hello, Mr. Mike Scott. How are you?
I'm not bad. I follow a couple of Instagram pages of just memes of people currently fasting with all the questions they get asked. And I can believe that the worst part of fasting must be dealing with the annoying questions that they get for a month. So we're probably just making this worse, aren't we?
Sorry, Dale. I like to learn, Mike, don't you?
I do like to learn, yeah. I also am quite happy that I can have a beer right now and not worry about that. But yeah. Other than that, I'm good. I'm absolutely knackered from the kids absolutely battering me this weekend, but yeah, I'm all right.
Right, what a fascinating chat with those two gentlemen. Just before we go on, you know, as Mike often points out, I rarely share. I mentioned a car breakdown. So I'm just going to alienate myself from all of you listeners by showing off for a little bit. I have a vehicle. It broke and it was recovered and went into the garage. And my courtesy car is the least likely courtesy car you'll ever get. So in the past, I've had a Nissan Qashqai, terrible vehicle, Vauxhall Mokka, awful, awful vehicle. And this time, I was given a Jaguar F-Type. 3-liter V6 F-type, which is, I feel quite intimidated by driving it. It's absolutely terrifying, I'll be pretty honest with you.
You have to thank the listeners as well, Chris. You forgot that, as you're using back of the nest money to fund your F-type. Go ahead. Why laughing? Yeah. I'm sorry I had to expose you, but go ahead. I'm waiting.
You're absolutely right. Thank you, listeners, for the 66 grand it cost to buy that car. It's a courtesy car, DR. You know that.
Yeah, yeah. What about your other car? How did you get that? Your other Jag?
That's a company vehicle.
Back of the nest. Company vehicle?
No.
There you go. It's getting exposed. I'm sorry. I just have to let it all out.
I can't believe you've waited to the end of the season to expose me and my money grabbing antics. Those adverts, mate. I'm telling you, when you hear whatever adverts are on by Acast, I'm telling you, we get so much buzz from those.
I just want to add something in, and I don't want to talk about cars because I drive the most boring Vauxhall. Producer Sam, who has been a stalwart of this podcast for the entire season, has been really keen for us to finish in time for her watching an episode of Game of Thrones, whatever time it is on. And she's exceptionally hungover because she's been on a hen do for the weekend with a lady called Claire. And we've taken ages recording, and she wanted to point out that Claire is a horrible, horrible human being. So I just want to add that in before we start talking about Palace.
Yeah, absolutely. And in solidarity, I would like to say, Claire, I hate you and everything that you stand for. Dior, you know what I think?
I hate you, Chris. Don't hate Claire. You don't even know Claire.
Oh, but Sam's told me all about her and her antics.
Oh, okay.
Plus, I've got history with Claire's. I've got no time for them.
All right, then. I hate Claire as well.
Apart from any Claire's listening today, unless it's Claire itself.
Exactly.
Claire's listening to our show, that are committed to our show. I've got time for you, Claire's. But any other Claire's, but no, that's it.
Terms and conditions apply to the hate.
Thank you, dear. Much appreciated. Right, let's get on with this. Great end to the season for Palace. Absolutely delighted to smash Bournemouth in the manner that we did. A very exciting game, completely belying everything else we've seen at home all season. And what a wonderful example of attacking football it was, and we'll be talking much more about that in a minute. There's a few stories we want to cover first. DR Kernas, you've picked this one out. Rumours on the day of recording that former Man City owner Thaksin Shinawatra, I did it for you.
Oh, thank you.
is looking to buy into Palace. And away you go.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, really, the time. And as a month or two ago, we heard the rumours that potentially the American owners want out of the club. So now this rumour's coming in. I don't think it's a coincidence. I feel like there's some truth to that story about the American owners. And I won't be surprised if more of these types of stories start coming in. But I looked a bit into, I'm going to call him Mr. Frank. I looked a bit into Mr. Frank. He owned Man City for a year. Why laughing?
Mr. Frank. Anyway, go on, carry on.
Yeah, and basically his former employee, Sven Goran Eriksson, I didn't pronounce that correctly, I know. He said this about
Sven Goran Eriksson, the England manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
Former England manager. Not the seventh Goran Eriksson, it's different. That's a different thing.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, this is what he said. He said in the beginning it was good with Mr. Frank but he didn't understand football. He hadn't a clue. He thought beating Manchester United twice in 1 year was normal. Told the players they must be more aggressive, he said. When we won, he invited me for dinner. When we lost, he didn't even say hello. Mr. Frank was in politics. And I feel like that last bit is important because now he's out of politics, of course. And it's been rumoured how he's wanted for corruption, etc.
Well, they weren't rumours. He's been exiled from Thailand for
yeah. But I feel like he's out of politics now. But of course, the corruption part is bad. But I still trust Steve Parish in making a decision on who to bring in, because at the end of the day, he still supports Palace, and we've critiqued him on this show for some of the decisions he's made. But he's kept us in the Premier League for how many years now, and I trust him. So I don't feel like if it was in the right man, Steve Parish would sell it to him. I don't feel like that will happen.
I just want to point out that there was a really interesting discussion from, I think it was Adam Sales on FYP a couple of weeks back, when he was asked, you know, for his input on the takeover and Americans wanting out and stuff like that. And he pointed out that, as far as he knew, the Americans owned 18% each and only one of them wanted out. So whether that's Harris or whether that's Blitzer, I don't know. But if one of them wants out and that's 18%, these rumours, a bit like transfer rumours, are going to be blown out of all proportion. But that's only 18%. That's the same ownership as what Parish owns. So the moment I saw this, I thought it doesn't add up with what people know about if one of the Americans wants out. Well, that's not ownership of the club. So I'd sort of spray a hose over this rumor pretty quickly.
Well, what I would say on it, so there's actually quotes in there. You know, they're talking to someone who worked with Thaksin, or Mr. Frank, as for some reason he's now known. So there's certainly it's more substance than just someone writing something about a rumor as such. So, but what tends to happen, and if you go back to all the times we've spoken to Steve Parish, you go back to some of the things he said in the press, whenever there's an expression of a want to buy a club, you know, certain people try to do it through the media. There's loads of expressions of interest. You know, I think they were saying that they get expressions of interest probably, you know, two or three a week at that level, at certain times. And it, I think, you know, you can see that there's some logic there, but the figures being talked about, you're talking about 150 million. Now, the club's going to be valued higher than that, you know, on squad alone. So it does make sense that it would be to buy a stake in the club, not to buy the whole club. Mm. But having said that, there's all sorts of reasons why, you know, which we can't really get into in the time that we got, about why that would potentially be a worry, but also might well not happen. Look, it's a difficult one. He's got experience running a football club, and surrounded by the right people, he might feel he can give it a bit of a go now. And whether or not the motivation is to run a successful football club for the, you know, the kudos, if you like, or to try and make some money, I'm not so sure. It tends to, I think the Man City ownership was only a year or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
But I think based on the quotes that you've given, DR, it's pretty clear that success was and prestige was what he was after in owning a football club. So there's pros and cons to that approach, but it does worry me, I'll be honest. But at the same time, if people do want to sell their share, or the club is up for sale and people are interested in talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. And 150 million is what's been quoted in all the articles I've read. So if we think back to when we were discussing last week about players' wages and that kind of thing and the value of the club, according to the index that you were looking at, and that was around the 600 million mark, you know, that would be sort of 25%. So 18 sounds about right. But as you say, I mean, if there's any kernel of truth to him having got anywhere with this, it is a little bit worrying. But we shall keep people posted, I'm sure.
And one last thing for anyone who cares, which some might do, his net worth is around $1.9 billion American dollars. I don't know why I said American dollars. Yeah, dollars.
No, there's other countries that have dollars. Australian dollars, Canadian dollars, probably others. Barbadian dollars. Is Barbadian?
I don't know.
Now it's probably not the time to wonder if it is Barbadian. I can look that up later, so I will. Or not. DR, the next topic is also one from you, I think. No, it's not. It's Mike. Mike, take us into it.
Absolutely faultless transition there. Good work. I wanted to discuss... I wanted to discuss... We often say that with the best discussions of Back of the Nest personnel come on our WhatsApp group. So I thought it's about time that we let the listeners in. And there was discussion on Benteke last night. And I don't know if anyone, DR doesn't drink, but, you know, a few of us may have had a drink. It got a little bit heated about Benteke's value, that kind of thing, where he was going. And I wanted to discuss the fact that DR has publicly said that he wants Hodgson out this year on more than one occasion. But he seems to defend Benteke to the absolute hilt, regardless of some of the stats. I'm going to hit you with some of the stats. Players who've scored more goals than Benteke this season: Luka with 12, Zahar with 10, Andros with 9, Batshuayi with 6, Schlupp with 5, PVA with 4, Jimmy Mack with 3, Max Meyer with 2, Jordan Ayew with 2, and own goals with 3. He's played 17 this season, he scored 1. And to put that in perspective, Sørloth's played 16 this year and scored 1. Last season he played 31, scored 3, so that's 4 goals in 47 appearances. So some of us were discussing that perhaps some of his value may have dropped, to the point where a couple of us were thinking perhaps he'd be worth between 5 and 10 million. Bearing in mind, he also got a year left on his contract, so that's going to put the value down immensely as well. The question really is, how can you back Benteke when you haven't backed Hodgson? And secondly, what's going to happen? What's going to happen with Benteke, and probably what's going to happen with strikers for the next season?
I'm confused. I only said Benteke is worth... I don't think we should sell Benteke for 5 million. I'd rather his contract runs out than we sell him for 5 million. It's not like I said, oh, Benteke is a world-class striker that's going to beat us. The conversation started from me saying, oh, would you rather us... asking the group chat, would you rather us sell Benteke if we had the chance to sell Benteke and get Mitro Batshuayi? I know we don't live in a perfect world, but if we had the chance, would you do that? And Mikey, the producer, he said no, because he doesn't believe in... he believes that Batshuayi's attitude could be a problem. But it just started from that. I just don't think selling Benteke for 5 million is worth it. I'd rather his contract runs out. At least if we get injury crisis, he's still got 2 legs, and I know he hasn't been the peak Benteke, but he has shown some decent performances this season, and I wouldn't sell him for 5 million. It's not like I said, oh, Benteke is going to be the next Messi next season, wait on it. I just said that he's not worth 5 million. I'll at least wait on 15 million or let him go for free, because end of the day, which he's not worth anything less than 15 million in this market now, in this day and age.
I'm actually dying when you said he's still got 2 legs. That's my favourite argument for the retainer and the striker. Guys, he's still got 2 legs.
He's had some decent performances. Hey, look,
I'm actually, you know, I'm a fan of Ben Benteke. I really am. Ben Benteke, as I just called him for some reason. I think that the debate we had was would have been interesting if I wasn't watching something on TV that I cared more about. But... I do think there's a lot of truth in discussing how much we can get from him in terms of value. It's, as you say, Mike, the contract running down really does affect that value. But you also have to ask the question, and I suppose this might be where DR's coming from. You have to really ask the question, what is he going to actually be worth to anybody now, based on the recent stats? But you have to kind of marry that up against what can you buy for 5 million quid in terms of a striker. Jordan Ayew, that's basically what you can buy. You know, a half decent championship striker these days will cost you 15 million quid. I think you'd take Chris Wood going to Burnley season before last, or last season, I can't remember now, but he was 15 million quid, and you know, had a decent record at championship level but never really cut it in the Premier League. You look at the money we got for Dwight Gayle going back to the championship, you know, 10 million quid. Christian Benteke still carries a reputation. He still carries the potential to rediscover at least some of that form. So I think that's where you get to the discussion about value, and I get what they are saying. But at the same time, it does seem the sort of the difference in wanting Hodgson out, which we'll look at his record in a bit, versus defending Benteke, who is not really delivered as a striker for various reasons. It's an interesting one.
I think my main view on it is, you know, he's on 115, 120 grand a week. And if we go back to what we were discussing last week about Palace's value as a club being down because of the fact that 78% of turnover goes on wages. I can't think of an easier way to to alleviate that issue than to just offer him out. I mean, that's a huge amount of money going each week. And you've got to imagine Jordan Ayew is going to be on, you know, a third of that. And he offers something different. And Townsend's played all season and Wilf's had a fairly injury-free season. He was decent cover when he came in for Wilf. So to me, Ayew's a better prospect for what we need. In as much as we do need a striker, but you know, we don't need one that's not scoring any goals. But he's just such a drain on wages for something that stressed the club out for so long that it's irrelevant whether he's 5 million, 10 million, whatever, because essentially it's the ongoing sort of operation expenditure that he's costing. Just if he's got a year left on his contract, if he scored 4 goals in 47 appearances, I don't think anyone would be that bothered if he went. I obviously wouldn't be that bothered if he stayed as well, but then someone else has got to go in order for the wages to even themselves out. And I can't think of a player I'd rather see go that's on high wages.
So what's your value of Benteke? What's the minimum that we should at least sell him for?
I don't think the amount matters. I think it's totally about his wages and the fact the wage structure is bringing down the ability to sign new players. So whether he goes for nothing or whether he goes for 10 million doesn't seem to make much difference to me. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I do think the thing that we shouldn't lose track of in all of this is that there is another option there, and that is to get Christian Benteke on a lower wage by offering him a new contract. I think that seems the obvious thing to do. You can address both the issue of having
great
to
point.
Replace
yeah.
And you also address the issue of high wages. Now, whether or not he'd be willing to accept that will determine whether or not we then go out to market. And that's where you get into that debate, that interesting debate. What is he actually worth? You know, a £30 million striker when we signed him? Definitely not that now.
Yeah, but as you said, Chris, that is a good point. But how much will Benteke willingly go down in his wages? How much does he want to have a pay cut for? That's another thing as well, because end of the day, he may not earn the big bucks here, but somewhere another club may pay him that. So it's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to solve. It's not like it's easy. It's just, oh, you can sell Benteke and everything's solved. His wages are gone and we got money. It's not as easy as that. I feel like you don't want him to go for too cheaply, but then again, the wages is a concern. But we'll see what happens in the summer at least. He's got another year left in his contract. So the club really need to make a decision this summer whether they want to keep him or they want to sell him and at what value.
I just don't think he's got a lot of bargaining power. You know, this is a man that scored 4 goals in 2 seasons. There's a lot of fans that are not a fan of him. You know, I've heard plenty of fans in the lower Homesdale calling him a donkey plenty of times. I think he'd have to sort of accept what is being offered, because I'm not sure many other clubs are going to offer for him unless he goes, you know, over to China and whatever the other rumours were.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking about. China. You could go to our countries like that where they just pay you a ridiculous amount of money, and then why would he stay at Palace? Because he will still be the same talent, but you'll get more money.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, the interest has got to be there first of all. There was that rumoured interest from China, but whether that's still there or not, I'm not so sure. Whether they're still spending the sort of money in that division that they were previously. Again, not so sure, but clearly, as you say, the decision has to be made in the summer. His stock is lower, so he should be expecting any contract offer to reflect his form over the last couple of years at the very least, as well as obviously respecting the reputation that he had when he joined and the work that he's put in since he had joined the club. But, you know, he has to accept that he's no longer the kind of top player that he once was.
And if we just think about the rumours today, I don't know how much truth there is in it, but I'm sure that there's a decent amount that, you know, that the club are having trouble sorting a new contract with Luka. It's fully understandable because, you know, he's probably looking at Benteke thinking he's on the best part of double my wages. You know, a top scorer this season, as well as being an absolute rock. So he's sort of, if anything, making the whole fabric of the club slightly skewed. And that will be causing a lot of issues. But if we go on to the other part of the question about Hodgson. We can look at his stats as well. Now, I had a look at the win ratios for managers since we came up, and he's pretty much up there. I mean, he's got 35.56% win rate, so 16 wins from 45 games. Allardyce had 40. Amazingly, Pardew had 40 as well, which I can't quite believe. But other than that, you know, Pulis similar, Holloway a bit less. So, I highest points total since a 42-game season, not the highest position. But I would say, despite Benteke, Hodgson has defied his critics this season. I don't know what Dio thinks.
I've already said, before around a couple months ago, even recently actually, how I wanted Hodgson out. And it's not I want Hodgson out because for the sake of it, it's for reasons such as not being stubborn with his tactics and not making changes when it's not working. But, you know, after yesterday's game, I had a real deep think about the season, because now it's over. I can just look back and look where we are. And it has been an emotional season, and I feel like this season, the reason why I've been frustrated is because of expectations. Last season, we finished the season off so strongly, and I expected us to at least fight for a top 10 finish, despite losing Kabay and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. As getting Max Meyer and Cheka Kouyaté, they were still decent players, and we already had a decent squad. But most part of the season, we were 14th, and we weren't really pushing for that top 10 finish, and pushing for top 7 as well. We were just stuck in 14th, and I think it was mainly due to tactics rather than luck. But then again, I'm just looking at our home form versus our away form. Away form, we're Europa League club. Simple. We're, I think, 6th in the table in away form. Whereas at home, we're 18th.
We know the performance from Max Meyer yesterday. You look at how we played in the game yesterday, and you can't help but think that was Palace with the shackles off. That was last game of the season. Let's not get dragged down by having to keep our shape, keep the game tight, all that kind of stuff. And both sides went at it. And there's obviously no guarantees that that's going to be the result of us attacking. But you can't help but think with the centre-back pairing that we had, with the attacking talent on show and how it was allowed to express itself, that there's perhaps a little bit of a lesson to be learned in, again, as I've talked about most of this season, trusting the strength of the squad, the strength of the attacking players to go out and outscore the opposition. Won't happen in every game, but I think yesterday, perhaps, as much as it placated a lot of people, certainly myself, and, you know, again, I feel a bit shoddy about how I've talked about Roy this season, because we've finished fantastically, really, really strong end to the season, and it looks ridiculous to even be questioning him now. However, you know, you can't hide from the issues that we have had this season, and why we became as frustrated as we did. So I think yesterday just served to fuel the fire that we could attack more, and the consequences aren't necessarily that we'd lose the game, particularly if you think about having a first-choice defence there.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, you got Kelly and Wald. So we're basically talking about essentially a third-choice defence, for central defence anyway. But what I would say, Hodgson came out after the game and said he didn't immediately talk about the 5 goals. He did talk about them, but he was annoyed that we conceded 3. And I was a little bit as well. There was an element of luck in our third goal, and there was an element of luck in their second. But conceding 3 at home, you know, that clearly bothered him. And I like the fact that we've got a manager that's more bothered about conceding 3 than scoring 5, I've got to say. It might lead to some 1-0 wins rather than, you know, really free-flowing football. But it doesn't take much. It only takes one injury to really aggravate a problem if you've got a really free-flowing forward line. One player missing, and especially if it's Wilf, you're in a lot of trouble. So you could end up, you know, knowing that you're always going to have a porous defence. As soon as you've not got that beautiful thing going forward, then you're in a lot of trouble.
Yesterday at home, he started Max, and it's not only Max Meyer that I'm after, but it's the fact that he's changing about. It's good in a way that he didn't start Max against Cardiff, and he started starting Max at home, because that's what we've been crying for, someone who can carry the ball and can be that player to go past the midfielder or two and create chances. And you saw that against Everton as well. He started Max at Everton and dropped him for the away game against Cardiff. So I feel like he's slightly making him changes. I don't know if I'm falling for the trap, but I'm just hopeful. If he continues making changes for next season, I'm confident that our home form can improve. But that's a big if. And he's shown signs of glimpses. And that's why I'm somewhat looking forward to next season now. If we can continue that, and hopefully in the summer we can shuffle and get some players in. I know it's going to be a bit hard with our financial position, but hopefully next season we can sort out our home form. And if we continue playing like we did away, then we can have a really decent season. But that's a big if. But I'm trusting Roy for next season. It's weird that I'm saying this right now, but I've got a bit of trust for him.
Yeah, I think people would actually be happy. And I think if you look at the way we played in this game, it does beg the question. If you think some of the home games where, I think Cardiff at home is a good example of that. And I think probably both home and away against Tottenham as well in the league. Those are the type of games where you just felt we were too reserved. We didn't play the way that we perhaps should have done. And again, look at the way we played against Brighton as well. Far too sedate. Didn't play the occasion. We tried, you know, you kind of almost understand trying to play, just play the same way. Keep yourselves calm, lads. Keep yourself consistent. You can't do that in a derby game. And, you know, Roy's been around long enough to know that. So I think those are the games that built the frustration. But when you come to the end of the season, you look at the table, you look at the goals we've scored, and some of the fantastic wins that we've had, you know, beating Arsenal, beating Man City, being the only club to do that. I don't know if anyone mentioned that the other day, but it just really, I think it emphasises that Roy's overall approach, we probably should have had a little bit more respect for throughout the course of the season. But again, it's completely understandable that we didn't. It's completely understandable that fans got frustrated, because there was certainly a period in the season, a run of games where I think if you pinpoint the loss to Brighton against when they had 10 men and then the loss to West Ham the day after, funnily enough, where, you know, we scored two goals against West Ham, but those two games in particular really turned the crowd, because it was very, very hard to take those two defeats in a row. And I think following up the Man City win with a 0-0 at home against Cardiff as well was a real trigger for a lot of frustration from all of us on this show and from a lot of the fan base in general. But I think most people would have got to the end of the season.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Season and be feeling a lot better about things, and that's only fair. Now, let's take a few minutes to talk about Julian Speroni and Jason Punch, and we won't talk particularly long on this, and that's not because we don't respect the two gentlemen in question. I think we just need to give it a mention this week, because we have got an end of season show coming up where I think we'll get into that in a bit more detail. I'll start with Jules. Obviously, there's so much you could say about him, but we just won't see a player in the modern game do anything like what Julian Speroni has done. All the videos that we've had to watch over the last week or so, it's been so, so emotional. At the end of the game, the interviews he's done, everything. It's just, it's so hard to watch Julian Speroni getting that emotional. But at the same time, I can't not watch it, because it's what I want to see from a footballer representing Crystal Palace. I want them to love the club as much as I do. And he just gets it. And I'm not trying to disrespect any other players, but to get it the way Speroni does, to have given the club what he's given, it's just, unbelievable. And I don't want him to go. I really don't, but he's going, but I just don't want it to happen.
It felt like my dad was leaving me in a way. I don't know how to describe it, but the way that Jules was on the pitch and La Pavona and me coming to act, like me actually realizing that this is it. He's leaving us now. Like, this is the last lap of honor, and then Jules is gone. It's just crazy because he's been with us for basically my lifetime. And that's a massive positive, because nowadays you don't really see that. But he's a top gentleman on and off the pitch. If you've spoken to Jules before, you'll know that Jules is the type of person who will just speak. Like, he's not that type of footballer who he'll say, all right, cool, yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll speak with you. Like, he's genuinely interested in the conversation. And from where he has started and where we are right now, he hasn't changed. He's still that same legend he is. And that's why it's such a big loss for us, because even when new players come in, I'm pretty sure there was a quote out there, even when new players come in, Jules is always there to greet them. And you saw by the reaction yesterday, there's some players that haven't been there for that long and they still respect Jules like they've played with him for the last 10 years. And that really shows it, because he's an absolute legend. And no matter what happens, he'll be missed. Just, even though he didn't play this season, he'll still be missed hugely. And it's unfortunate, but best of luck to him in the future.
It felt like my dad is leaving me. Wow. That's some prophetic words. It's a bit of a shame that you're not old enough to remember Alex Kalinko or Gabba Kiro, really. Because we've had our really decent share of amazing keepers. There's been a lot of questions have been around Jules this week, obviously. Thank you for all of your comments, as ever. Let's take Richard Evans. Can't Spironi be kept on as a goalkeeping coach, or does he not want to do that? Basically, from what I understand, he wants to carry on playing. So the reason that he's not going straight into a job at Palace, as I'm sure he'll end up doing, is that he wants to carry on literally playing. So I'm sure he's going to end up one or two seasons with a lower league club. And I don't think that anyone can begrudge him that, because apparently he's still as fit as ever, still training as much as ever. So if he thinks he's got two seasons left in him, then he'll be back at Palace. There's no question.
I think he's definitely said that that's the reason. He hasn't been offered anything to remain at Palace as a player. And he has options at home and abroad, from what's been said by various people on the socials. So it's a sad thing, but I think he said it in the post-match interview, where he said he doesn't want to have any regrets about stopping playing. He could stop playing, he could remain at the club in whatever role that might be. Obviously, we have a goalkeeping coach, but I'm sure there would be room for him either as a maybe an academy keeper coach or something like that initially. I'm sure there would always be a place for him at Palace. I have no doubt about that. But I think, Dougie's another one who said it about you play on as long as you can. That's the advice that all the old pros give you, because once you stop, that's it. And you miss it and you can never get it back. So it's sort of a little bit, obviously it is heartbreaking, but at the same time, it's great to think that he'll go somewhere and get to play another couple of seasons, bring that experience and that joy to another club. But nothing will ever stop the fact that, he is Crystal Palace and always will be. Whatever happens at another football club, that won't change a thing. And you can only wish him the very, very best for that. So I think, so go on, Dio, one last little bit on Spironi. Let's get to punch after that.
Oh yeah, I thought you was going to skip punch for some reason. Go ahead.
No, let's obviously Jason Punchin was at the game, which was a nice touch. Technically he was still on loan at Huddersfield, but I don't know if he was injured, suspended, or just they allowed him to not be selected and come back to Palace. But it was really nice to see him get a touch in reception. Not always been given the respect he perhaps deserves from some areas, but in general the crowd love him. And what was really nice for me was, his words that were sort of published after the game, where he talked about the fact that Palace is his club. Everyone says, oh, Punchin's a Spurs fan, Punchin's a Millwall fan, whatever. He as a kid, he was a Palace fan. He said that, confirmed it. He feels Palace is his club. And he gave us some absolutely great years. Changed as a player, joined us very much as a winger, converted to an excellent central midfielder. And for a while, he was what made us tick, whether people want to accept that or not. He was absolutely vital. There was a very long period of time where we hadn't lost a game where he started. Some of the goals as well. And I know there was some, you know, a couple of great free kicks winning big games, Man City, Liverpool. But most important for me was the goal against Norwich that really changed the direction we were heading at the time. I don't think he'd scored for either that season or at least the majority of that season. And just out of nowhere, as we were struggling to break Norwich down, cut inside from the right-hand side, smashed a left-foot shot in and just ran over screaming to the homes down, just basically burst into tears. That memory will live with me a very, very long time. I've seen a lot of emotion from players, but the look on his face when that ball went in and the just sheer relief, it's only probably matched by his emotional reaction to the FA Cup final, but we don't talk about that. So what a player for us, and rightly given a fantastic reception.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say I was Jason Punchin's biggest fan for when he played for us. I'll be honest. I think it went a bit downhill after the captaincy. I don't know what it is with captains and us. Scott Daniels was like a similar situation. But yeah, I think overall, if you're looking at some of the goals he scored, his contribution has been massive for us. You think about, I'm going to say it, the FA Cup final, that goal, I've never celebrated a goal as hard as that goal. And that was from Jason Punchin. The Norwich goal, as I mentioned, that was from Jason Punchin. He has been a great servant for us in his time here. And I feel like the bigger picture here is that, yes, Jules is leaving and I'm very upset about that. And yes, Punch is leaving, which in pre-season, I thought he had a good pre-season and maybe he could have been a decent squad player. But that wasn't the case, of course. But the bigger picture here is that the club is thinking in financial and business terms rather than having a personal relationship with players, which is good because, as we've mentioned before, we're not in a position where we're good financially. And that's good to see from the club, at least, is the fact that, you know, if you're not going to contribute to the squad, there's no point of you giving your contract just because you're Jason Punchin or even Julian Speroni. As much as it hurts me, Jules is the third choice goalkeeper. And yes, he wants to play, but he's not going to contribute to us in really any kind of way. I know he played for us against Tottenham and Liverpool, but I don't know if he's worth paying money to, in a way. Jules is going to come back anyways. But yeah, I think that's the biggest point out this to Jules and Punch, is the fact that the club is thinking in financial terms, and that's good, really.
Yeah, there's always, I always like to think that there's room for sentiment in football. And we'll talk more about that in a sec with the non-selection of Speroni. But Mike, I'm conscious you did mention Punch. Your views on Punch?
Yeah, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone. He didn't rip up trees at Huddersfield either, although that was pretty much an impossible task. But I reckon he's got another season in him, maybe League One. You know, he's had his issues off the field, and I think that maybe meant that the fact that both of them were leaving this week, Jules was the only one that anyone talked about, and I can understand that. But, you know, he's still got a bit of life in him, and I'm sure he's going to end up being like a pundit or something. I'm sure of that. Like, he's a charismatic man. He'll do well.
It's funny, a few players that have played with him have actually mentioned him as a potential manager in the future. And I don't think many people thought that was something that they would have expected to hear. But at the same time, that would interest me just to see whether or not he could move into that type of a role. But whatever's next for him, obviously got to wish him all the best. Definitely got a bit of time left in him. Still, you know, played a few Premier League games. Yeah, he didn't, as you say, didn't rip up trees at Huddersfield. But, you know, in the games that he has played, as Dio mentioned, pre-season and the bits that he just did in the first team, still looked like he's always had good technique, always been a calm presence on the ball. And I hope he can go on and play another year or two and really have an effect somewhere else. Right, let's delve into the match itself. It's end of season. There's 8 goals. It's nigh on impossible to cover exactly everything and analyse it in detail. I want to do a quick summary. I think it was pretty obvious from the first whistle that it was going to be something of a spectacle. initially it was a bit backwards and forwards, didn't know what was really going to happen, and just racing into that 3-0 lead was unexpected. I think the deflection on the cross was fortuitous, but the finish from Batshuayi was excellent for the first goal. I think, well, let go on, Mike, let's jump in, let's talk.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Batshuayi. First of all, it reminded me of the whole game that sealed us staying up. I think it was two seasons ago. I just went into the game thinking we would win, which is really rare against Bournemouth. Like, the away game, I love their stadium, standing in it, but I knew we were totally outplayed by them for the majority of the game. It just felt like we were going to win this, and Batshuayi really cemented the fact that he seemed to be, like, when I was talking about being an attacking team and having one player missing is the difference. Batshuayi was the reason that we did so well in that game. And I know Wilf was amazing, but that first goal, it was pure luck that the cross landed up for him, but such an amazing finish. The second one, I've got to say, Wan-Bissaka was probably having a shot. He probably thought, yep, that, yeah, I haven't scored a goal yet, I better have a crack. Like, I haven't seen a player with that sort of sense for goal at Palace for a long time. And I feel like he was the difference in the period that mattered in that game. So the first 40-odd minutes, he really was special. And if that was his last game, it's going to be sad to see him go. Because apparently, I think it was on Match of the Day, I'm not sure, I haven't double-checked the stat, but he started 9 games and we've won every one of them. And that is quite a statistic.
Yep. Yeah, I think he scored, I think it's 6 in 13 for us, including those two. I'm going to say it, Mike. You know, it's good to see someone prowl in the box. It really is.
Absolutely.
As you say, we don't see that too often from our strikers. And, a striker who comes alive in that 6-yard area, they're worth their weight in gold if you give them the opportunities. And you really do feel confident, as Andros was last week when he celebrated before the ball even reached Batshuayi. You feel confident if he gets that opportunity in and around that area that he's going to put it away more often than not. And I talked last week when I got into my red, amber, green stuff. I talked last week about how had he really done enough to justify being a £30 million striker. And it's funny what one game can do, because all of a sudden I'm thinking, yeah, if he can score at that rate throughout the course of a season, that really does address a lot of our issues up front. But you have to play to his strengths. And him playing up alongside Wilf really had started to click. And we'd seen Wilf play really well alongside Benteke as well, who's much more of a physical presence. But the hold-up play from Batshuayi was very strong as well. Probably the strongest I've seen him play that role. So it was a lot better. But a lot of that comes down to the amount of space available on the pitch. It was considerably more than we've experienced at home more often than not this year. I think that was a huge factor in what we saw. Whether or not you can do that by being brave on the ball and taking the game to the opposition and playing someone like Max Meyer to unlock it, that's always going to be the debate. And we can't really answer that question clearly. But I was hugely impressed by him.
What we really need is a natural goal scorer, and that's what he is. It's not like the way that we play, the strikers aren't really that involved until it comes to the final third and you're in a box and the ball comes to you. And you saw it yesterday, and the game before that against Leicester, Batshuayi, he made the most out of chances. It's not like Batshuayi gets the ball, runs past players, because the way that we play, we don't really expect that from strikers. And he really fits into our system, and that's what I feel like. And it's going to be difficult in the summer, of course, and I don't really see it happening, but we should make it. We should try our best at least to try and bring Batshuayi back. I don't know what's going to happen with Chelsea because they've got a transfer ban. They're going to have around 500 people on the training ground when the summer approaches. So they're probably going to get rid of some players. So I don't know. We might have a chance. We may not, but we have to try our best at least.
It's tough. Like, Chelsea might not have the transfer ban. It might be lifted. And he might be an option. And I would say, the wages would be enough to to maybe tempt Palace into buying him, regardless of if he is 30 million. And he is one of those players that can disappear for 70 minutes and then pop up. But what's important about him is that you're exactly right. He fits into the system, and that is really rare. Like you can get a striker that seems amazing, but if he doesn't fit into the sort of counter-attacking play, you can talk about Benteke holding up the ball as much as you want, but it obviously didn't. It didn't make that much difference to counter-attacking football for Palace for the season. So I really was a fan of him, and I honestly can't see him coming, just because I don't think Chelsea are going to let anyone go whatsoever. But it's sad, and perhaps I'm a little bit more sad about that than I am about punching, to be honest.
Wow. Here we go. Wow. I just want to very quickly, at the time of recording, 12 minutes ago, Christian Benteke has actually tweeted saying, "It's been a tough season for me personally. Injuries have meant that I've struggled for consistency. The fans have been incredible and the boys have performed brilliantly. Looking forward to pre-season already and coming back ready to hit the ground running for next season." So there you go. So he's saying that he is coming back. Did you clap because he clapped? Is
yeah. What? Who clapped?
All right. Benteke finished his tweet with a clap. I'm just wondering if that's what you did. Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that. Okay. There you go. Good work. So I just wanted to mention that in there. I won't go into any more detail on it. So we talked about the first couple of goals. Obviously, the third goal was from a fantastic run from Wilfried Zaha. And he played like that all game. He was brilliant. And we'll talk more about that in a sec. Fourth, so obviously Lerma hit an absolute screamer before the break. After the break, deflected effort from Jordan Ibe. Brought it back to 3-2. So, you know, started to get a little worried, and Bournemouth were on top. But the fourth, well, Mike, the fourth.
I just wanted to go back to the Lerma goal quickly, actually. Bearing in mind he couldn't be in the goal of the season on Match of the Day because it was on the day. But for Kompany to get it and Townsend to not get it, I just... And then for Lerma to not get it... because I've not seen a goal at Palace where we're all just like actually clapping, just like, wow. I mean, that was such a strike. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And I would have said that was better than Kompany's goal as well. And I know it's because City won the league and all that kind of stuff, but
that excuse is rubbish though. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah. It's not. Oh, what goal was the most important? It's goal of the season. Which goal was the best, regardless of the situation they're in? And Andros Townsend's goal was better than Kompany's goal. Simple as.
Yeah, completely agree. Rob Palmer tweeted in earlier saying, "Why the hell Townsend's goal wasn't goal of the season?" And absolutely right. It is idiotic. And then, as you say, the justification given on Match of the Day, it just, again, big club bias, idiocy. It's you know, yeah. What's the most important goal of the season is a very different question to what is the best goal of the season. They should be talking about the best goal of the season. Ian Wright almost said the right thing before backing.
You got pressured, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just ridiculous. And yeah, if it could possible to lose any more respect for that programme, I have. But there you go. So it's PBA, wasn't it? So much maligned in recent times.
Yeah, and I mean... most of the credit's got to go to Wilf again. Like, I would say possibly his best game of the season, and proof again that you shouldn't wind Wilf up. But it is exactly what PVA needed, and it was still a great finish. I mean, I know that the keeper's, it was only his second game, and after his amazing man of the match game, the first game he had, it was a pretty rude awakening for the Premier League. But PVA needed that, because again, early on in the game, it felt like he was missing, and it felt like he is the player, you know, that's the position that we maybe need to strengthen in the off season. But we proved again that going forward, he is amazing. And let's not forget that Wan-Bissaka hasn't actually scored a goal for Palace, but PVA keeps, you know, making sure that he does get on the score sheet, and he's still got his place. Like, he's a very attacking he's a very attacking player, and yeah, respect to him, because that was not by no means was the move finished when he got the ball. It was a tough finish.
I feel like PVA, it was important from Hodgson to start him, as you don't want player to overthink why he's been dropped. PVA understands that he hasn't performed well, so you drop him for a game or two, but then if he dropped him for the final game as well, he may overthink it, and going into the summer, you don't want that. But regards to PVA and Wan-Bissaka, like, okay, PVA hasn't performed, but yeah, Wan-Bissaka don't score goals, but you don't let in goals. That's the difference. I mean, PVA scores goals, but even yesterday, he was a liability defensively.
He was, absolutely. I'm not saying that makes up for PVA's problems, but I think that's the only thing Wan-Bissaka's missing. But what PVA proved is that you can have a player on the flank making a difference. And to be honest, that was the goal that ended the game. And it was an excellent finish through his legs. You can't fault him.
No, absolutely right. And of course, yeah, ideally you want him to do a better job defensively, but he does bring you that threat going forward. Obviously, the final goal from Townsend, first of all, great finish. But second of all, the most important part, you mentioned not making Wilf angry. Lerma had wound him up, got him booked, and he just exploded, didn't he? Just absolutely, he was in danger with his reactions to Lerma to getting sent off. He was really quite wound up, had to get spoken to a couple of times after the yellow card in that immediate aftermath. And then, obviously, the Bournemouth fans, you're going to cry in a minute and all this kind of stuff. But then he did exactly what you want him to do. Most importantly, it's a big two fingers up to the people who call him a diver. Because Klein, I'm not kidding, when I watched that challenge back, he could have gone for that. And Lerma just had no interest whatsoever in anything other than trying to push Zaha over. Too strong, too fast, too skillful. Great ball across, fantastic awareness. And he rightly celebrated that goal like he'd scored it himself, because it was all about Wilf. I hope very much that it's not the last time we see him in a Palace shirt. But if it was, what a fitting way to get for a send-off. Just absolutely, just epitomises everything about him in one moment. Brilliant.
I mean, I don't want to be the harbinger of doom, but, you know, he's really come into form at the end of the season. And that was so special. I think that was possibly my favourite goal of the season. Because so many times in those situations he's gone down, he carried on going. He was so angry with Lerma. Like, I think any other player, he would have just gone down and realised that the player would have got a booking, took the set piece, carried on. But what worries me is that was a high-profile goal. People have realised that Wilf has come on from the sort of, maybe even this season, but certainly last season, where he would have gone down, made a mess of it, moaned a lot. He's carried on strong as hell, strong as an ox, and crossed the ball over to Andros. And that just seems like that's the sort of perfect way to say, how much do you want to pay for me? That's what worries me about that move, that fifth goal. I think I'd have rather won 4-3, because that's going to make some big clubs think, Wilf, it really is special.
I know what you mean, but I'm not that worried after one goal. I don't think a club's going to come and say, after that one goal, all right, let's get Wilfried Zaha, because he's shown class before. But I think with Wilf, he's still under contract. It really depends on what he wants. If he wants out of the club, then if he wants 60 million, let's say, if he wants out, then clubs don't have to pay 60 million. So it really depends on what Wilf wants. And what people tend to forget, which I talked about on Love Sport as well, is that, yes, Wilf wants to play in the Champions League and all the European competitions because he's got the talent too. But then again, you have to realise footballers got life outside of football. And Wilf's family, well, from what I see on social media anyways, he really cares about his family. And it seems like he's genuinely happy where he is right now. And I think that's another consideration that you have to think about as well, is that, all right, Wilf wants to play in European competitions, but is he happy with his life? Because there's more to life than just football. And some players may want to play, may care more about football than family, but some players care about the opposite. So
absolutely, but this is panic. This is just pure panic now. This is a Palace fan just panicking. That's all this is.
I'm just saying in general. Like,
this is me panicking.
Okay.
And to add to that panic and to destroy the point that you're making there, DR, there are other bigger clubs in London.
So I understand that, but the rumoured clubs haven't. So you've heard Tottenham, nothing's happened with them, and I doubt they'll come for Wilf, but you never know. I don't know. I'm not that worried about losing Wilf, I'll be honest, in the summer.
Well, okay, well, let's see how that pans out. Look, there's plenty more to talk about, the fact that it's an end of a season. Review various other bits and pieces, talk about what we expect to happen in the summer, all that kind of business. But we will save that for what I hope will be at some point an end of season show. No idea when it's going to be or who's going to be on it, but at some point we will definitely do one. There's one last little bit of listener contact from Harvey Jones asking our views on the new shirt, which I think we'll end with. I will give my views first of all. I absolutely love it. The second I saw it, loved it. Loved the flashes of white on it. It just, proper Palace kit. I think Harvey said it, he keeps seeing hints of the 97 shirt, the whole Lombardo thing, the Adidas shirt, I think that was. Fantastic kit that was. And I really, really love this one too.
And there's no yellow on it, which I think is, you know, really important. Going to white instead, that's made such a difference. I mean, the Puma kits are obviously already really popular because the third kit has been sold out for a few weeks now. But usually you can get the dreg sizes of all the kits after the end of the season in the sale. They've all gone. You can get nothing but small. I can guarantee, like, I am not in any way a fat man. Like, I'm fairly small. I bought myself two larges of the player fit, and they are tight as fuck. They are so tight.
I had to swear.
They are so tight. So I thought I'd get myself an extra large. All gone. So the Puma kits are really popular, and they've just made last season's better. So I cannot fault it. I thought the little white line down the front was a bit weird on Luka, but other than that, best kit in a fair few years, I reckon.
It makes it stand out, doesn't it? I think their away kit got a lot of to live up to now after their home kit. And yeah, we're talking about kits at the end of the day. It's not the biggest thing, but we scored five goals. we scored five goals in this new kit. So like, it's a good start.
It's an important question. Kits are important. Like, that's what makes you remember a season, isn't it? And I really hope it's not a yellow away kit, and a black one would be absolutely lovely.
Yeah, me too.
There we go. Well, excellent. Cheers, gents. Lovely bit of fashion at the end there. Always enjoyable. But no, I totally agree with you, Mark. You do often define seasons by the kit. And certainly when we look at our past and talk about seasons, we always seem to refer to the relevant kit. Well, I did it earlier. I talked about the Lombardo kit, so there you go. There was another question in there about how well Andros did, but we can't.
We'll talk about Love Sport.
Talk about Love Sport tomorrow. That's 7 till 9 p.m. Live, but also will be a podcast shortly afterwards. Preview show's done. There's nothing more to preview, of course. And this obviously has been the last review show of the season. Can I thank all of you so much for listening throughout the course of this season, or even if this is the first one you've listened to, welcome. And yeah, there'll be something else soon, but brilliant. Thank you so much. Obviously thanks to my panel and to everyone else who's been on the show this season, on this review show, and of course Sam for producing, and obviously anyone else who has produced the show. I suppose I better mention Mikey by name. Thank you to Mikey for all of his antics in the background. And we'll get properly into the thanks next week. Next week. Whenever it is in our final show of the season. Until then, see you later.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.